Hey, welcome back to Community in Code. I'm Chris, Jazz Sequence on the Internet, and my guest today is Courtney Robertson, developer advocate at GoDaddy, longtime WordPress core contributor, co-founding board member of the WP Community Collective, and a good friend of mine who, when I asked her to make sure I didn't wallflower at PressConf in 2025, the first event I would go to solo after becoming a developer advocate at Pantheon, she took that as a personal challenge and set about introducing me to as many movers and shakers as possible. That's sort of what Courtney does, and what she's always done really well. Above and beyond the WordPress documentation and education stuff she's contributed to over the years, it's really the glue work of making connections between people and groups that make Courtney unique. We talk about many things, including DevRel, but we focus a lot on AI, particularly how we are using AI in our own very human-focused roles. She's honest about that tension. We revisit the Juliet Reynders-Fulmer conversation from a few episodes back, the open source licensing question, the maintainer burnout problem, and the gap between what AI lets developers build and what developers actually understand about the things that they're building on. This is a good one, so let's get into it. Without further ado, Courtney. Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits, and I'm here today with Courtney Robertson, who you might know in the WordPress space as a developer advocate at GoDaddy. Courtney's been a longtime WordPress core contributor. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Hello, Chris. It's good to see you. Yeah. One of the first things that I recognized is that I think one of the first conversations we had was you indicating that we'd be at an event together and you wanted to connect with other DevRel folks, as we often do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would have been going into PressConf, yeah, which was the first event that I went to as a developer advocate that I went to solo. And I had gone to like events solo myself as a speaker. I've gone to events as part of like an agency, and I had gone to events as just an engineer that was going with like the Pantheon team to events. But it was the first time I was going to something solo, and I didn't want to default to the wallflower version of me that doesn't open conversations.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if this is a general statement or a trend I've noticed. Some of the best engineers in my life, and DevRel, a lot of people get there first by being an engineer. A lot of them are introverted kind of folks, and it takes that when you get into the heads down zone. So it's curious to me that going from the wallflower to I've got a podcast and I'm here and I'm there. How's that going for you?
I mean, it's pretty good. Like I will say that like I oscillate between, you know, two extremes, and like a lot of less introverts that are less on the extreme introversion, I like am fine when I know the people around me, and I like have somebody that I can kind of latch on to, and yeah. But like it's difficult to want to insert myself into conversations. It doesn't come naturally, but I am also very sort of extroverted generally, and did lots of theater and like yeah, hanging out and get energy from being around people and doing all of those sorts of things. I just need a little bit of a nudge sometimes to enter into things. But yeah, no, I think, yeah, this is the last of a series of recordings that I accidentally deleted. And at the time that we did this recording originally, I was talking about the number of hats that you wear. And the number of hats that I wear has actually increased in the intervening time. So, and we're both at this intersection of there's a bunch of different communities that I'm like involved in, a bunch of different Slacks and things. And one of those communities is like DevRel broadly, and one of those communities is WordPress broadly. And so we're both kind of at this intersection of DevRel and WordPress specifically.
Yeah.
How do you DevRel for WordPress?
that's a good one. So my time is my most of my time that I do these things is my employer. And so it starts with, I have a role that if you've ever worked in a corporate environment, you understand the term dotted line. It means that you're the connector of the things. right? And so what a lot of DevRel is or looks like is involving a lot of connection. And so GoDaddy has several WordPress hosting plans available, as well as we have shared hosting. We have managed hosting, everything from a managed regular simple site to Pagely enterprise scale and unique things for WooCommerce. But then we also have a lot of business at GoDaddy that is your SMB audience, your small, medium-sized businesses. And a lot of those folks have historically chosen a shared hosting plan. And so I'm looking at WordPress in all of our areas, and the ability to contribute and be that dotted line means finding the value that GoDaddy needs to know about in the process of everything, right? And so I contribute whether or not GoDaddy is my employer to a lot of things. And I have been a contributor to WordPress since 2009 when I failed to buy a ticket to WordCamp Mid-Atlantic, in which Anil Dash, then of Movable Type, was the keynote speaker launching a competitor to Akismet. I failed to buy my ticket in time, and I said, is there anything I could do to get in? And they said, would you like to register everybody at the door? So they thought that I was somebody. And in fact, I was absolutely nobody and knew nothing. But it's a great introduction to doing the things, right? Can I give people name badges? Yeah, I can handle that. That's not a problem. But then when it comes to actually digging into WordPress, you know, right now the 7.0 release is going on. And one of the things that I am working on is connecting. We have two full-time contributors to .org, Kira Schroeder and George Mamadashvili, goes by Mama Duka in all of the places.
Yeah,
so great folks to get to know. And Kira has been with the project, I think, since soon after college. So it's been some time for folks that are in our age bracket, outing myself too. And so I'm taking, oh yeah, we've got, for instance, the collaborative editing coming with the Google Docs-like features in this release. And what I saw in the demo is that right now it's scoped for two people to be able to be logged in at one time on a post. And my thoughts go to, how does this perform in our managed environment? How does this perform in our shared hosting environment? What does that do when we start load testing that? And so one of the things I do is coordinate the meetings between the engineers that take care of our hosting environments and our contributors and say, y'all get together and start figuring out what do we have to do to make sure that this is going to work. Other things can look like a little bit of competitor analysis, testing out sometimes when a competitor launches a thing, or right now it's whoever's launching whatever shiny new AI for WordPress. I sometimes will go and test that. But also related to releases, you know, being involved in some of the different teams in WordPress has been a real help in, for instance, if I'm already assessing for GoDaddy what is on our sites, many sites that we have, whether it's a blog post of a general release or looking over old help articles, et cetera, that might need to be revised. Well, why not also then simultaneously support docs and training when I can? Why not help on the meta team? Yesterday, as a funny in the little WordPress community bubble, someone was calling out how the login page has the new color. There's a new default blue coming in all of WordPress. We've had that as a design in our themes on .org for several years. Kelly did amazing work with this. But in the process of that, in updating core runs, or I'm sorry, .org's website specifically runs, you know, the beta version is on it right now. And so you see that some of those buttons changed a different color. I saw somebody in Twitter sharing that the logo on the login page doesn't match the button color now because they have updated .org. So I went and logged the meta ticket. And so is that DevRel? Sure it is. Could I be doing DevRel specific to WordPress itself? Yes, I could. That would be full-time inside the project. My role is sort of that bridge of DevRel between GoDaddy and the project, and looking at what's going to make sure that all of the WordPress websites that we're providing to our customers are really top-notch experiences.
Yeah. That's a lot. And then and it's obvious, like, listening to that, like, where all the hats come in, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, in the course of making all of these different connections and being involved in all of these different things, which is sort of just the natural thing of, like, performing the function of being a developer advocate at your hosting company, that you'd kind of necessarily need to be involved in all these sort of adjacent things, which is also the thing that I have found.
Yeah. And it's, we do what's called glue work. And yes, sometimes that can be undervalued. Or it could be seen as, well, who are you? You're not really on my team to whatever. But also, when folks look at the concerns that we're raising or the topics we're bringing to them, they're like, oh yeah, we probably should be doing some of that, right? One of my coming soon things to do is to sort of simplify the process of testing our different plugins against the pending release. Mm-hmm. I know that our Skyverge folks pretty thoroughly handle that. That's our e-commerce line. That department tends to handle that. I need to double back and check over, are all the features inside of CoBlox, which are some of the other plugins we have, or we've got the bridge between GoDaddy's hosted sites and if anyone's using ManageWP or the Hub, there's a plugin that makes that possible for those tools to connect to your site to help bulk maintain and manage. So I need to make sure that I'm testing, you know, that those things will work. And that involves spinning up sites on different platforms constantly, looking over the make.wordpress.org/test team site for some guidance on what are the new features that they really want tested. Are there other things that I know internally might conflict with those features? Prioritizing some of that work and also keeping an eye to a bit on, you know, the official WordPress roadmap is deliberately broad and short. Mm-hmm. But I just attended a meeting with Matt Mullenweg last week, the end of last week, that was his walkthrough on, there's a link to it in the core team's posts. There was a meeting scheduled for people to come to the walkthrough, and the recording has been posted on that post. It's an unlisted YouTube video, but you can all get to it. And he was sort of describing wanting the command palette interface to be available in the admin dashboard. And mm-hmm. so in attending that meeting, I recognized, oh, a lot of plugins, themes, and hosting sites put some other extras in that admin bar that's not just the normal top of the window notification. And maybe I should start letting folks internally know that Matt seems to be moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. Right. It's nothing that I can find a document about at this time. It was an idea that happened in real time. It's not coming in 7.0. It's something that he found during the walkthrough that he would like to see come. So I would imagine that by the time it hits an issue or a ticket or something, it's going to land in probably 7.1.
I have probably a half dozen things that I can think of in my admin bar on my personal site that and I can just imagine what that's going to look like, the CSS as a result of putting a command palette up there, because like already there are things that sometimes trail down to like the next row and look bad. And so like, that's just going to be everything.
Right. Yep. And in the midst of being that connector in our respective organizations, always making it really clear what is the business value of this activity. Because we're not just celebrities on YouTube as it is, or wherever.
Being a celebrity on YouTube has business value.
Oh, there's that. Yeah. But it's also connecting like what is helping others that we work with understand what it is that we can do for them, and also likewise them understanding the value of what we're bringing to them, and making it really clear for all the other eyes on things that why are we allocating time to doing that? Like, why is Courtney requesting that we make 7.0 beta available for testing on different platforms when it's only beta? Well, mm-hmm. right. We want to make sure that we're moving in the right direction. So one of the things that I have found, and there's a graphic with this that I've shared with Chris, and he can share it in the show notes, but just kind of this idea of what the developer relations framework. There's a really great book if you're interested in DevRel, or you find yourself suddenly in DevRel, developer relations sort of discusses what the framework is. And so my own journey into this is that I was a former comp sci high school business ed teacher, meaning I taught programming in high schools. I taught WordPress in high schools in 2015 using Pippin's plugins videos, if we've got any old timers in WordPress around, because there really wasn't something like Learn content available yet, learn.wordpress.org. I've been a big part of the training team over the years, and that helped launch Learn, but I was teaching in the classroom, teaching how to develop WordPress plugins and themes back when. And I've done this in adult boot camps as well. So that formed my journey in, but other people come in by way of engineering sometimes, or there are a few other different pathways to get into DevRel work. But if you envision a tree, the base, the trunk of the tree is community. And then if you imagine that there's, you know, three pillars up next that include marketing, experience, and success. So dev marketing, dev experience, and dev success. And at the top of it is dev education, developer education. I'm not sure that there needs to be a specific logical order to all of it, other than yes, community at the bottom, because we are community managers in addition to engineers, in addition to communications specialists, in addition to all the things, more hats. And so DevRel folks, when you find yourself in an organization that can sustain multiple DevRel staff, often will start to specialize into areas. So someone with a teaching background might be really up for dev education. That sounds like what I was doing when I was teaching. Developer marketing, developers hate being marketed to, and it takes a unique skill set to explain to any company that wishes to target developers for their products how to market to developers in a way that will not put them off because we're really special. And then thinking through what the experience and success looks like if your customers are developers as well. So within GoDaddy, you know, we do specialize in the small business sector primarily, but we have customers really in all segments. But what's the experience that whoever is developing with our offerings looks at? So that could look like, if I put it in the WordPress context, when you onboard a website with GoDaddy, we offer you both install a plain vanilla or go through our onboarding flow that integrates AI into it and can build out quickly. So if a developer wanted to go through that flow and then had further ideas on, I'd really like these new AI tools leveraged into that, or I want the ability to synchronize it with my OpenClaw or whatever the flavor of the day is, getting that kind of feedback from whomever is building out the site for the customers, be it their own staff, themselves, or they hire out, getting that kind of feedback, I think, is really, really important for developer experience and success. So we have to think, my goodness, we switch gears so often, and we have to think about sort of all of these different segments going on and how we bring business value. And also, if we're adjacent to open source, how we get to do the good altruistic work in open source that aligns with our employer's priorities, and then what maybe we pick up independent of that as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of connection. I like the framework. My entry into DevRel did not come a lot of people fall into DevRel, I feel like, which is to say they are doing the work or some of the work of DevRel before they actually have the title. And that was definitely true for me. I was organizing and speaking at WordCamps for a long time, and writing about stuff, whether that was WordPress stuff or not, but I was writing about WordPress stuff usually for like my, employer's blog, for a while, sometimes on my own blog. And all of that stuff is really sort of DevRel work. It's like, it's relating to developers. It is talking about best practices. It is like doing the thing so that, and then at, when I was at Pantheon, we have a community Slack, and so engaging in the community Slack, answering questions, that was one of the few ways as an engineer that I had to get insight from people who were using the things that we were building, right? Which is really important for a product and engineering team to know, to have a line of communication to the people that are using the stuff that they build. Yeah. So like when I But like it was already a thing that I was doing, and now I get to focus on it. And one of the things that I lacked in engineering that I feel like I gained when I joined developer relations was the ability to spend more time playing with and breaking the stuff.
Yeah.
Because like in order to talk about the stuff, I need to use the stuff. And yeah. As an engineer, I wasn't using it. I was only using it to test a bug ticket that I was working on. And as soon as that bug ticket is complete, then I close it and I shut down the site. And I'm not actually using the tools or the platform that we're building, but now I get to use the thing. And like, yeah. You know, this site, this website that is hosting this podcast is running on Pantheon and is running on a specific product that is in beta and like all sorts of stuff because yeah. I'm doing the thing, like using this as a live demo environment to test all the stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, when you're in that cycle where you don't get to test with it, by the time your workday ends, you're probably not picking it up as a hobby. Nope. You want to go do
anything else.
I've done my time with the computer screens. Let me go play in the dirt now. Yeah. I do a lot of gardening. So that's the reference on go play in the dirt. It's like, I need, once warm weather comes, I've got snow out my window right now. That blizzard just blew through. But as soon as warm weather comes, oh goodness, please find me out with the tomato plants as soon as I'm out of work.
So you talked about your entry a little bit into WordPress, and you talked sort of, so I imagine that your entry into developer relations specifically came by way of this sort of like training and education sort of thing.
It did, yeah. So while I was teaching, I also put in a few applications. I was looking for some part-time work because I was going to have a baby and wanted something I could do around staying home with the baby. And so I pivoted for a while to working at the events calendar. Was there for about 4 years, got really good at things like the agile engineering methods and Jira and all of that good stuff. But the more important part is that I went from working in customer support because I could put it down, walk away, take care of baby, come back when I need to, et cetera, to writing all of the knowledge base content, maintaining the entire knowledge base, as well as all of the things that go into handling a release. So that's writing the release post, that's understanding that we need to train the staff that are in our support about the features that are coming to our product and clarify for them, need to relay to the engineers, here are spikes in this thing, need to identify what needs new knowledge-based articles, help articles, etc. Did a bit of video production there, did a lot of like, here's the social media tweet to go out announcing the release, et cetera. The team that I grew the most on, hilarious story, I never wanted to join because it was WooCommerce and I wanted to just stay in my little bubble of the events side of the house and not the things that integrated with Woo or EDD at the time. But in being forced to move teams, I got to know Scott Clark really, really well. Scott of Pods and now a coworker of mine at GoDaddy. And you know, I used to be intimidated as all could be on interfacing with the engineers because I felt that I was bothering them with my questions. A lot of imposter syndrome going on. And realizing that I wanted and could do more during one of our team trips. And Scott was like, no, wait, we really want your ideas. We want to hear that. And so that meant the world to me. Scott, Steven, and Gustavo really just took the time out. These are engineers that I worked with there and took the time out to kind of hear out the ideas of what is possible, what we could do to improve some things. And they were then happy as could be whenever I started correcting their typos on their change logs. Yeah, right? Because those are important when you get them into a release post. So I was starting to do some of that work. And then I pivoted at the beginning of COVID to full-time teaching at a boot camp. And there were some interesting challenges with that. You know, we don't have official WordPress.org certification at this time. And in the education world, they still are subject to the same things of the trademark as we see in other places. And so they can't overtly say This is WordPress, like we're doing a WordPress program with use of a logo in the education sector because there's no processes for that at the time. I am hopeful that .org, I know that Matt is open to .org having certifications, and I've chatted, if we've got longtime listeners, I've chatted at length with Morton and Andrea on these concerns. And, you know, who vets, who oversees the whole thing, how that logistics work, you know, we'll get there one day. We'll get there. We're big. I think we're a good pipeline still in the age of AI to things. But that said, you know, I feel like educating folks about how to do the thing becomes that much different now in the age of AI, because sure, we could watch the long form content and go through, you know, a series of an online course. But I also think about how much more expeditious we need to be about training AI, because AI will take us to the very niche thing that we're like, I need to learn this skill now. And I need to fix this thing right now. And I feel like ensuring timeliness on that delivery is going to be the key for making that really happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I'm interested in the entry that WordPress has been leading towards with regards to integrating with AI. I'm interested in how it lands.
Yeah.
Specifically because I've been watching Drupal evolve that over the last probably 2 years. And they, I mean, they literally have a 2-year head start. And it evolved in WordPress from the community, the plugin space, before it came into core, which honestly for the WordPress ecosystem kind of makes sense. But that was like something that, like Dries Boitart has talked about how he, and a lot of people have parroted this, parrot is probably a little bit derogatory, have repeated this, to say that, Drupal is uniquely capable of integrating with AI. And when Dries says things like that, it makes me wonder, is that technically true? Is there a reason why that's technically true? Is there a reason why Drupal is more like can talk to AI better? Is it just because you had that 2-year head start? Or there's something about how it's structured? I do think, like, you know, there's a lot more emphasis on structured data. And I think that is probably what we're talking about. But I don't think that that's necessarily absent from WordPress. I'm interested in the AI things in the WordPress space. I'm kind of just on the sidelines and kind of just watching how it evolves.
Yeah.
I have found recently, with all the hats that we wear, and I have found particularly very recently that there are many things that I need to be doing simultaneously. with there being one of me and there being one of you, I have started using AI to make some of that stuff faster. I know you've been playing with that for a while. Since we're kind of on the subject of AI, talk about like your relationship with AI and what you're using it to help with, and and how successful or unsuccessful those endeavors are.
Not me over here with Claude also open during this thing and just hitting accept on a couple of issues. Don't we all keep Claude running on the side all the time? So I really got into using AI, well, first as a contributor to WordPress. So the videos that go on to learn.wordpress.org, we wanted to have everything captioned because prioritizing accessibility, if you've met me, you know that DEIB, including learning styles, as a former school teacher, I bring in like this awareness of learning styles and accessibility needs. And as a teacher, I was tasked with accommodating everybody and tracking things. So I bring that into every area of life that I can. So we were using otter.ai, and there was another one that we found really helpful when we were dealing, and this was early. Also, Descript was early too. So Big Orange Heart put out WordFest events during the pandemic. And for all of those things, we used AI transcription tooling. Otter AI is one that we use to upload the videos. I think the other one began with an S, but we found that that was better when you had somebody that was not from America, Great Britain, Scotland, Ireland, etc., and Australia. It did well at picking up those, but if I had, for instance, Hari Shankar, I needed to... Hari is a well-known former WordPress contributor. Hari's very much fluent in English, but lives in the nation of India, and these tools at the time have come a long way since then. But at the time, we're not the best at particularly identifying his dialect. And so I used AI then for those types of things. I moved on to using it inside of reviewing my news articles. So I have a whole workflow where I go through different sites every day, first thing when I open up. And one of them is my RSS reader. Another one is YouTube. And I'm looking for what's going on in the industry, brand mentions, et cetera, when I do that. And I look at my YouTube subscriptions. And then I have a smattering of other news sites and social places. DevRel folks, we like dev.2 or daily.dev. There are a few of those kind of places that I check. Basically, I have a whole process of go figure out what content I want to keep notes about. And then I automate it to go to my Readwise account, which is a Read It Later service. And I, as part of that, have an automation that creates notes in a template that I always want. I still manually go through the majority of what I send there and highlight things myself. The things that I highlight, I may also make personal notes on that area. That all synchronizes in a beautiful way to my Obsidian Vault, and then I publish it for other people to be like, what's Courtney come across lately? I haven't shared that in a little while. So I do a lot of knowledge work with this. So if you're aware of Peter Drucker and the concepts of what's a knowledge worker, I do a lot with AI for that. I use Descript a good bit recently, which is a video editing platform that does transcriptions. They give away a certain amount for free, but I can have it use AI to fix my eye contact. So if I pre-record a video and I'm not looking directly into the camera, Descript can fix where my eyes are looking or autocorrect. If I say, for instance, I've been making a lot of videos lately about one of GoDaddy's new offerings, Aero AI Builder, and it is a small business approach with vibe coding apps and websites. So how would small business owners use a tool? And so we've customized something akin to Lovable or Replit, et cetera, but for a small business intended audience, not an engineering audience. So in making those videos, I needed to pronounce the full name of the product. And I had only said Aero, A-I-R-O. And so I used AI to go back and fix those pronunciations. But I also use it for coding a good bit. I use it for a lot of workflow automation. I recently set up, I like Alestio. If you're not really wanting to DevOps your own hosting and you really want to make use of like an AWS or something for some small side project type of things, I'm using Alestio for some of that. And I have it helping me. I used Claude Code to set up my OpenClaw on Alestio and then connect my, I use Penpot, which is a compete to Figma. And I have Active Pieces, which is an open source compete to, oh, Penpot is open source. Active Pieces is like IFTTT or Zapier. And then, what's another one? I have another instance where it's talking to N8N as well. So I can get Claude Code, hey, I want this done. I've got other work to do. Go start doing those things on my hosted environment. Don't do this on my local machine. Go to my hosted environment and do those things. And so it's happy to kind of get at it and do those. I vibe coded a couple of plugins. One was about WordPress post formats. One was about XFN, which is really old school internet protocol. But if you are interested in things like the indie web, like Fediverse and self-hosting, owning your content everywhere, I'm almost done with another plugin. So I wouldn't have been able to do any of these as quickly as I am. Almost done with another plugin. And when I do the plugins, I also include write the docs with some screenshots and host it in my GitHub repo because I'm not building out a business on these. These are things that I just wish WordPress would have inside of core, like a proper post formats for all block themes. Or XFN, if you're in the Fediverse, it claims rel equals me. And so AI came out with some really slick, the XFM plugin that I did was a pretty small, simple one. But the way that it came out with how it connected things was really brilliant. And Matthias Pfefferle, who is behind the Activity Pub plugin, really was excited about how that was shared or integrated, and picked up on some ideas to use then for what he's doing on Activity Pub. So, you know, what I can do with AI is pretty vast. I could do an entire workflow of plan my week out, review what I have in the Things app. My to-do list is in my Things app. Look at, here's my recipe vault. Here are my goals for the week. Here's da-da-da. And AI, can you help me like get a quick view of these things, right? So, I don't know what to do anymore. Not just if the internet goes out, but now if my AI tool of choice goes out.
Yeah, right. It'll be like when AWS goes down and half of the internet goes dark for, you know, however long it lasts.
Yeah.
I've got thoughts. The what you were talking about, Descript changing your eye contact. I recently, like just like this week, I was creating a graphic for a live stream that I'm doing, and I have this picture of me that I used. That I was reusing, and I used it for a thumbnail that I did for like when I was in DrupalCon, and it just me sort of holding a microphone because I was like talking at our booth, and but I'm like looking off here, and the camera's over there, and it's a good picture. I'm just kind of have a neutral expression, and I know that Photoshop has neural filters, and I was looking through the neural filters because I was zooming way in, so I was already doing some like correction to make it like sharper. And I noticed that there is a thing that was like change like facial expression and eye contact and stuff like that. And I'm like, sure, I'll click these buttons. And the result was so horrifying.
Oh,
it's sort of like my face sort of squashed. I kind of had like a, like it was real bad. So like, okay, nope, big nope on that. So obviously these things, like, it would be great if I could, like, you know, just kind of guide my eyes a little bit over there. So that's just funny. So I, you know, have been dabbling with, I've been dabbling with AI for a long time, outside of work things, and I've been doing coding related things and like Copilot and, ChatGPT and stuff like that, and using, and also Gemini, and like using different tools integrated into VS Code. But recently, so last month, as we record this, we had a hackathon at Pantheon, and my hackathon, the project that I wrote, is a thing that I've wanted, for a long time since I've been at Pantheon. And it was made possible because back in like November, I think, of last year, a bunch of Pantheon engineers kind of went into a room for a week and did just a real quick sprint to make a public API exist, like fabricated out of nothing. And for a long time, we've talked about this would be really cool, and I've wanted it for a lot of reasons, particularly because, you know, you log into Pantheon and there's a Pantheon dashboard, but as a WordPress user, the only dashboard that I really care about is the WordPress dashboard. And that's the thing that I go to, and that's, as a WordPress user, that's what I interact with. And there's a lot of things that I can get out of the Pantheon dashboard that I can only get out of the Pantheon dashboard. But as a WordPress user, I don't want to have to log into two different things. I want to pull as much stuff from that dashboard into WordPress. And that would be possible if there is an API. There wasn't an API. Now there is an API. So I got to use, for my hackathon project, I used Claude Code to build the plugin that I had dreamed about for 4 years.
Same thing. Post formats and block themes? Yeah, that's complicated.
In a week, and it was like thousands of lines of code and multiple files, and like, and it did things like way faster than I could. It would have taken me months probably to build that plugin.
Mm-hmm.
Even just to like, there are certain things, like there's one thing that I wanted it to be able to do, which is on a WordPress multi-site, when you hit add new site, I wanted it to be able to make an API call through the API to Pantheon to add that domain to the domains list in Pantheon, so that every subdomain automatically just gets a new domain on Pantheon, so you don't have to do that manually. And I thought, you know, it's going to take me, I don't know, maybe an hour or so to research where the hook is and figure out how to use it. And then it's going to take me time to actually do the code. And I asked, you know, can you do this thing? It's like, sure, I know where the hook is. And then it literally did it in like 5 minutes. Like this thing that would have taken me, you know, at least a day to like research and implement and test and do all the things. Like I just, like I said, can you do the thing? And then I tested that the thing work and the thing worked. And yeah.
Research part that you bring up there is something that I find especially powerful. Be it researching engineering related mindsets,
Yeah.
I can code. I can teach anyone to get up to being a junior dev. You don't want me being like a L4, L5 shipping on production. No, I am not that senior. I can get people up to being proficient to apply for jobs. That's where I'll stake my claim. So, related to that type of thing, I liked how during October, the month of October, Tammy Lister had the Blocktober website, which showed different ways to use Automattic's Telex, which is a way to prompt to create a block. And a block is essentially the code from that you could download. It's considered a plugin at that point. If you put a bunch of blocks in a plugin or you have just one block, it's still just a plugin. And so Tammy was sharing some of the prompts that she was using for Telex, but also she and Nick Kamsey both are product-minded folks. So they had put together individually some different types of Nick, I especially recall on his site having a here is the kind of research that I have AI do about if these kind of blocks exist and what's going on in GitHub for Gutenberg specifically or elsewhere in the core project. What are the gaps? And what are the needs that people might have to decide what type of blocks to build? And I thought that was a fantastic way to sort of approach that is use it from the holistic. We're going to start back at the product owner kind of level or product manager type of level is another way to say it. Research all the things. What can I build? And now let's go do the thing. And so I applied some of those same types of ideas to building out the post formats area because we have a default theme now that does fully support it, except that it doesn't really call in, for instance, post formats are the thing that made WordPress a little bit Tumblr-like back in the day. And it was an interesting release. It reminds me that I think that was one of the first times it was like around 3.9 or 4.0 somewhere. It's been around a while, but I recall writing the release posts on my personal blog back then. That was before I was even at the events calendar. And I look back now and giggle because I'm now writing them on GoDaddy's site. That's a little different. But you know, how should I handle this behavior, that thing, these connections? And the latest one that I'm doing with aiming it for the indie web audience involves piles and piles of APIs. And so one of the things, in addition to just vibe coding these plugins, is thinking about what are the security things. I know about Playwright and end-to-end testing and Jest and PHP unit testing and da, da, da. I know conceptually that this is what the engineers go and do. Have I ever done it? Thanks to AI, yes. It's still AI going through those things. But coming back, having me vibe coding a plugin, and then at least coming back and saying, hey, AI, I'm not releasing this as a paid thing for a business, but I feed AI, here is what the plugin checker plugin is doing on my site and saying, here is what the query monitor does. And I want you to run these, set up and run these kind of tests for Jest and unit tests and, you know, all of those things. And tell me at the end, what are the assertions? So engineers understand these terms quite a lot if you work in an environment with lots of other engineers. And so AI has helped me level up a little bit more on the security side as well. And I think that we're going to see as things keep moving forward, people will keep trying to break everything because that's the fun of hacking sometimes. And unethical folks will like to exploit where those hacks are. But then at the same time, I think that AI is going to just keep getting a little smarter on the daily about, like, hey, that's a great plugin. Would you like to do testing on it? And let's make sure that the code is quality, especially when we begin to write it, not at the end, and those things. And I do a lot of prompting too for prioritizing accessibility in my code work. And then anything that's content driven is prioritizing all of that with the EIB inclusivity, especially matters to me.
Yeah. I recently, as we're talking about AI, and this conversation reminds me of a conversation I had recently with Juliet Reyners-Fulmer on the show, and she has some very strong thoughts and feelings about AI.
Yes.
And among them, I mean, to sum up, basically the gist is, like, because of how AI was trained, we can't go back and reverse time and maybe do it in a more thoughtful and ethical way, because it was basically trained on the web. So it's here, and because of that, it's ingested just a whole bunch of stuff. And particularly when we're talking about code, it's looking at open source code from a variety of different places. It's looking at GitHub repositories. It's looking at, you know, whatever. It's looking at stuff on Stack Overflow. And that code comes from different places and is often licensed under different open source licenses.
Yeah.
And not all open source licenses are compatible with each other.
Yes.
And the risk for her, and the thing that she has identified, and I don't know that there's an answer for, I'd love to hear your thoughts, is that if we use AI to help us write code, we have no real idea where the sources or origins of some of that code comes from and under what licenses. That, like, you cannot say with certainty that the code did not come from something with a conflicting license.
Absolutely agree. So Juliet is one smart lady, and I am delighted that GoDaddy has taken up funding PHPCS, which is the code sniffer or the coding standards for PHP. It's kind of this bridge between PHP, the language, and many other things that use it, one of them being WordPress, but not exclusively. Juliet also does a lot of the work on WPCS, which stands for WordPress Code Sniffer or WordPress Coding Standards. And so engineers are very familiar with that intersection there. She knows the root of the language more proficiently than almost anybody else could or would, and has a unique skill set for both of those areas that very few people in the world would know. Folks that are really, really PHP driven, come along to support some of that work. That would be amazing, because we don't want to ever have Juliet be the one maintainer of the thing. That said, I think then, you know, the best that folks that are not at that skill level can do is to prompt in such a way that you're like, look up, this matters, look up every license that you're pulling this code from. Make sure that the only exceptions that that you tell me if something is, if it's MIT or if it's GPL or what have you. And if you're unfamiliar with those things, a really great resource is opensource.org. That organization are the keepers of what defines open source. What does open source mean? And they connect with lots of different organizations that are in the open source sector. And they're the keepers of, like, what are the different standards that you could use? What are the different kinds of open source foundations, et cetera? And I think that it's wise to take what Juliet is saying and at least try to adapt it. Now, is it going to be as good as Juliet reviewing my code? No. Does Juliet want to review my code? Oh, no. Juliet has enough work to do on just PHPCS and WPCS and PHP things in general. But I think that, you know, we can at least take some of those learnings and apply that into how we're coding.
Yeah. Yeah. I there's some interesting, like, my suspicion, because I've done research, a thing that I realized early this year was that, obviously, in DevRel, in representing our companies as developer advocates, AI is going to be a hot topic this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a hot topic for a while, but this year specifically, particularly with how Cloud Code has suddenly, like, gotten, like, way more into the forefront, I think that that's going to be a big thing. So I seemed important for me to do some research. And so I opened up a notebook LLM, like you do, in 2026. And And now with Notebook LLM, you can actually ask it to do research for you and it'll go out and find sources. So I was interested. I was thinking about this idea. I was also thinking about my experience with Claude Code. I was also thinking about, and now I'm thinking about like the Matplotlib author, a maintainer who was basically harassed by an OpenClaw bot for not accepting that pull request. Yeah. I'm thinking about that in context. And so I'm
How Curl had to shutter their Hacker One, which is a bug bounty program that if you find an exploit, Curl is lowercase c, the rest uppercase URL. And that's really important. In WordPress, we saw when zip files couldn't be uploaded.
Yeah.
That was related to curl on some hosting environments. So it's another layer in the stack of like, you got your WordPress install and under the hood of WordPress, we're calling for a million different other open source projects and layers.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating to study and to look at. But so, that one thing, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like the maintainers are getting overwhelmed.
So the thing that I was looking at, and the thing that the point I was meandering toward, is like I suspect based on some court cases that are now starting to come out related to AI, like either images that were created by AI and whether or not they're copyrightable or code or whatever, that I feel like the law is probably going to fall on the side of, well, we can't identify it, so the license doesn't apply. I feel like that's probably where the courts will settle. And yeah. I don't know that that's necessarily a satisfactory solution for the world of open source and the world for contribution, particularly as like AI can just say, oh, I'm going to pull in this library. And like a thing that I've been thinking about recently is like there's an increasing gap between like, because of AI, your knowledge as a developer between you and the maintainer of the things that you're using to build your code. And because AI is creating a barrier where like it's doing that research for you. So you as a developer, as a vibe coder, whatever, are just getting the product of like these other people's work, but you don't even know that these other people have been involved in the project that you're now building. Right. Yeah. So that's a thing. But I feel like, the law will probably just be like, yeah, but you know, whatever. Like, yeah.
One of the next uses that I have for AI is another hat that you and I both wear. We wear a couple of overlapping hats. So we are both on the board for the WPCC,
indeed,
as well as both contributing to FAIR. And FAIR.pm has a release coming out soon, and they're going to provide me with the change logs. This is actually something I've started doing.
I was wondering if you were going to use AI to help you build out this.
Heck yeah. I'm going to take the change log and then ask it, you know, what goes into a really amazing release post, give it some nudging, and then let it start that process. And here is where I will say, I am absolutely going to go back and look at every GitHub issue that corresponds to.
Right.
This is part of what you do when you are prepping for a release, is like assessing what are all the issues that I actually go back and read a lot of those in the WordPress sector. I read a lot of the Gutenberg issues in GitHub directly so that I really get a deep understanding of how do we get here and what does that mean? And so, I'm not as much interacting on those issues as just like I need to read and understand so that I can explain it in a simple way to other people. Mm-hmm. And so AI will probably help me leverage
to explain things. Sometimes I need AI to explain things in a simple way to me.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, what was in that engineer's head? When I earlier referenced Scott, Stephen, and Gustavo, we didn't have AI available then. And that's wherein all of the human awkwardness just kind of dissipates now, because I can be like, AI, help me with the thing that I feel stuck about. And it's like, well, why do you feel stuck? And then I'll be like, blah, blah, blah. And it says, okay, here is perhaps even a script of what to ask somebody or helpful. I don't get into a lot of medical conversations with AI, but I did want to use it to open a, like, I had an initial ask for my doctors, and I tend to just info dump. Mm-hmm. And then let it clean it up. in a way that's logical for other people to understand. And it was good with that, right? This isn't, it wasn't a major medical issue. It wasn't revealing too much personal data. It was just saying like, hey, I've got a set of questions I need to ask the doctor. And so help me put it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, thank you, Courtney, for coming on again.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah. So the best place for me to direct people, if you're watching the video, is CourtneyR.dev. I am pointing at it. All of the links to my social profiles and other things can be found there. You can find me as CourtneyR_dev or CourtneyR-dev on most platforms too.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on, Courtney, and thank everyone who may be watching or listening to this in the future, and we'll see you all on the internet.
Bye, all.